Hello once again, everybody. Thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday Takeover edition of Bang the Book Radio for June 27th. My name is Adam Burke. I'm the host here. We'll have Sports Cheetah on today's show. We haven't talked to Sports Cheetah in a little while, so it'll be good to catch up with him. Keep in mind that this edition of Bang the Book Radio is presented by DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use that promo code BTB Radio. Good for a $10 free bet just for signing up. Then an additional 50 to 100% deposit bonus based on the amount of your initial deposit. Tons of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com right now. Churning out a lot of content, MLB, college football, golf, NASCAR, wrapping up the NBA draft, looking ahead to the next NBA season, all kinds of stuff going on over there. Also, don't forget about those three contests. We've got our Daily Streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, and also those cash prizes for the top monthly win percentage, top ROI, and top number of units won. Give you a little bit of something to do here as we get geared up for college football and the NFL seasons. College football about 2 months away here from today, and then the NFL, of course, coming back a little bit after that. We'll talk about that with Sports Cheetah and a whole lot more here on today's Tuesday Takeover segment. We'll go ahead and bring on the man of the hour. That is Mr. Sports Cheetah from WagerTalk.com. Preston, good to talk to you, man. How you been?
I've been good. It's good to be on the show again. Thanks again for having me.
Well, I know you've got a very busy time here. You've been kind of bouncing around, doing a little bit of traveling, some family things, stuff like that. That breather that you get to take here a little bit, of course, you are working on college football and you still have other things going on as well. But, you know, how do you try to maximize your downtime here just so you don't get burned out? Because handicapping is a year-round thing.
You know, it really is, and that's half the reason. I think we've talked about it before, but for those that haven't heard, I only bet baseball through May and maybe the first week of June. I basically bet it for 2 months and then drop everything. It's as the NBA finals are winding down, and so the NBA is ending, and I'll wind down my MLB and get ready to prep for football. But so outside of I'm still doing work, you know, and I'm still doing research and writing and preparing for the college football season and then the NFL season, but it's still a lot less stressful than, you know, following the day-to-day, like looking at the screen all the time, following line movements, you know, information on who's in the lineups or not, or pitching scratches or this and that. And it's a big break. And so we take a few vacations during the summer to help where I can always work on college football from wherever, you know, we're located. And so we went on a long vacation. I was in LA for 2 weeks just recently. And then this like last weekend, I know we were talking before, but I was in Portland for a wedding. It was a quick trip, doing two more vacations later in the summer, the end of July and beginning of August. So it's good to get that all out of the system and kind of regenerate or recoup for, college football, which starts towards the end of August.
Something I kind of want to ask you about here, because this is a downtime and really the only major league in town is Major League Baseball. And, you know, if you bet golf or you bet NASCAR or something like that, you still have some options throughout the week, but you're not an action junkie because you're just somebody that's out there playing the edges that you have. You're not playing because you love the thrill of gambling. You're playing because you're playing, you know, the edges that you've got. So when you do have a lesser number of plays, less money in the game right now, is that something that's hard for you? Does that take an adjustment period?
No, it doesn't really. I promise. It's part of the needing a break, I think, mentally and probably physically too. You know, I'm able to like exercise a little bit more now in the summer and go do stuff that sometimes I just don't have time to do otherwise. And so, not having the type of volume that I'm accustomed to is refreshing. And so I definitely don't really need to adjust too much. I think I enjoy it enough where it's part of my routine from year to year and sport to sport, and I've grown to enjoy it.
Do you find yourself maybe, you know, subconsciously going out, playing a little bit more poker, playing blackjack, anything like that? Or have you just, you know, fashioned your mind to the point where, you know, you're just kind of used to it here at this stage of the game? And like you said, you kind of welcome and embrace the break.
Yeah, I think I really am just used to it. I play cards probably like once a week on average. I kind of have always been playing maybe once a week. And usually when I go, it's just at night to get away. If I had like a long day in the house watching kids or whatever, I'll put them down for bed and then go to play cards from like 9 to midnight or 1. So I usually only play for maybe 2-3-4 hours. So it's not even that many, you know, hours or hands per week anyways, but it's good to just get out and do something that I enjoy. But I, you know, as far as the big scheme of thing goes for the summer, yeah, I'm not playing any more than I probably was before. If anything, maybe less because I'm out of town a bunch throughout the summer. So yeah, no extra itch that I need to go out and scratch to feel like I'm getting that degenerate need fulfilled.
Well, and really the thing that I was going for here is just to, you know, explain to our listeners that downtime is a good thing. You know, sometimes just not having any plays on the card can be refreshing. You're not sitting there checking the at-bat app or checking whatever score app you use. You know, I mean, this is a 365-day job. There are no off days. Even as you said, you know, you're not doing baseball anymore, but you're still studying college football. You're still looking at the NFL, still looking at your bankroll, tracking your results from previous seasons, double and triple checking things. So you know, that grind really never does stop. But you did stop with your Major League Baseball here. As you mentioned, you stopped pretty much the end of May, first week of June, something like that. So how did Major League Baseball go for you this year?
It was positive. I was it was really, really swingy, which that tends to happen for whatever reason for me with baseball. But it was something like we started like 13-2 or something, and then I lost a bunch in a row, like 6 or 7. And anyway, we ended up the season, since my volume is pretty low and I only bet for the first month and a half to 2 months, we ended 26-20. Plus, the way WagerTalk grades their stuff, it's basically I had all 3% plays, and then I had one big play to kind of end the year on the Brewers against the Dodgers, I think 3 weeks ago now, and that was a 5% play. But we won, you know, 21.5% basically, so like 7 units or 7x, which was positive. The year before, we had a season that won't ever happen again, and so I was just glad that we were profitable and we were, you know, beating the Lions more often than not, and then it panned out. I've talked to a lot of Sharp baseball guys that are struggling this year, and so I just felt fortunate that we were ahead rather than a lot of them that are down or struggling to maybe break even at best. And you know, a couple of them that have even pulled out, I just found out this morning. Some groups that are generally dumping into the MLB market decided, you know, this year just isn't the year, I guess, and decided to save their money. I don't know what it is. That's kind of surprising because those guys, it's like, you know, if they're beating the market, they have positive CLV, they're just going to keep throwing money at it. But it was such a bad season for some of these groups so far that they've just pulled out, at least for the time being. Prep for football, I guess. They're trying to bet some WNBA, some other niche stuff to try to get and recoup some of those profits back. So anyway, the reason to bring that up was just that I don't mind stopping either when you're having a, you know, a profitable season, and a lot of other guys, you know, have been struggling. And so I feel like it was a good time to just, you know, call it a year, which generally is around that beginning of June times when I'm switching gears to football and the NBA is over. So it worked out.
So is that mostly what it is, being able to turn the page to football, or is it just because baseball? I mean, when you talk about variance in sports betting, there's no more maddening sport than baseball. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. It's money line sport. So, you know, obviously that changes your betting a little bit. Is that what it is? Is it the variance, or is it just, you know, hey, it's college football season, this is the cash cow in the industry, this is what I need to focus on?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I have the answer to that exactly, but the, you know, there's always going to be variance in every sport, no matter what. And so I guess the fighting through that is generally just part of the coping as a gambler, whatever you do, whether it's poker or betting on sports, there's always going to be downswings, and you just have to try to, obviously, like, you know, the cliche stuff, like have bankroll management, don't blow your load or whatever. And, you know, sometimes it just gets to eventually. And honestly, I was thinking about it just as I was saying it again to you now here on the show, just because I hadn't talked to anybody about it yet, because I just heard a couple hours ago. But I think it's refreshing, or I kind of respect that they're actually willing to just pull out. You know, they're dumping like $200,000 a week plus on baseball, and they're finally just like, you know what, we're getting crushed, and, you know, it is what it is. It was a bad year. And I think psychologically it's very healthy to at least take a break. So maybe they'll jump back in a few weeks or something, you know, but I think having a break definitely doesn't hurt. And so, yeah, I would definitely recommend that for anyone that's struggling to, you know, from the day to day or week to week, whatever it is, whatever sport, if you ever just in a downswing and you see that it's affecting the way you're placing bets, then it's important to, you know, have an approach like just stopping for a couple of days or a week or whatever it is to get back over that hump and then, you know, fire again when you're ready.
Well, and what's really interesting about that is I follow the baseball market on a daily basis. And of course I have the bettors box on Mondays and Thursdays, and I write a picks analysis piece every day. And I've found, and I've even told my readers and my listeners, that this MLB season just feels different than the others. And I don't know if it's because there are just so many bad starting pitchers out there, or if it's because run scoring is up across the league. The ball seems to be juiced. Guys are changing launch angles. I don't know what it is, but it almost feels like some of the stuff that we used to be able to do with sabermetrics and analytics isn't carrying as much value or carrying as much weight as it has in the past. It just sort of feels like maybe we need to find that new big, you know, that new inefficiency, that new frontier with baseball. And I don't know, maybe it sounds like it is a problem that is plaguing a lot of us out there.
I will say, for people that are still betting baseball, or maybe are more new to baseball and they've seen how this season's broken down, it's been the sharpest as far as openers go ever. Even just a year ago, last season, you'd regularly find 40, 50 cent, you know, openers that are moves from the openers at Chris. You're not seeing that at all this year. Even BetOnline openers are like, maybe you get the 20, 25 cent moves. And then even then, you know, you're not winning a ton of those right now anyways. And so I think in general, the openers are sharper. So people are betting into tighter lines to begin with this year. And then you talked about the juice balls and stuff like that. And maybe just so many bad pitchers, this and this. I think definitely as far as betting unders, which I think a lot of sharper guys tend to lean towards unders. That's just always been the case for baseball or all sports. But just like other sports, NBA's picked up the pace as far as just running really fast, shooting a lot of threes. The NFL with the rule changes and running more up-tempo, same with college football. They're all scoring more runs, and then sure enough, now we have baseball headed that way. And so now the sharper thing's been betting overs. And, you know, this year especially, I remember what it was. Last I heard, it was like betting overs blind is like netting you 30 to 40X this year in baseball. So, and I got caught later on in the year because I didn't bet a ton of totals. The 26 and 20 we did in baseball was 26 and 17 on sides, but I bet three totals after, it was probably in May. So it was after some data had come in, and I just thought there were some over adjustments because of, you know, all the early overs and the balls flying out of the park. And sure enough, it got me three times where I was betting under because it was so far off to my projected model. And, you know, sure enough, I lost all three. So that was frustrating, but there's definitely been a change this year in baseball. I think the sharper openers and stuff is because people, like you mentioned, Adam, have access to a lot of the same advanced stuff and metrics that we've been using for, you know, the last 5 to 10 years, and has given us an advantage. And now that advantage is pretty much diminished to an extent. So yeah, it is going to be more either, you know, for me, it's playing way more conservatively. And by that, I mean just a lot less volume. And, you know, I bet baseball for like 60 days and had 46 plays. So, you know, and if people that follow me for football know I'm betting like 20 games a week in football. So it's a different, completely different for me. But that's the way I think I just have to pick out the biggest edges that I see. For other people, it might be trying to figure out, you know, a certain stat or advanced metric that is new and not being applied to the market that's, you know, efficient or predictive. And, you know, that could be the case in the next year or two or three. But it seemed like this year especially, everyone was just getting crushed at, you know, doing the stuff that's been working for the last few seasons.
I mean, it's incredible. I've seen 10s and 10.5s in games at Safeco Field. And not to say that Safeco Field is a pitcher's park that it once was, but still, 10.5, 11, those are numbers generally reserved for Coors Field, maybe two really awful starters at Chase Field. And we're seeing 10s and 10.5s just all over the place this year. It's remarkable. I've never seen anything like it.
I'll say this before we switch over to the other leagues, but I heard on the radio, it's probably been 2 weeks now, but I imagine it's a similar pace. But the amount of home runs hit this season is, you know, now we're coming up to, I don't know, are we like 40% into the season, maybe a little bit more now. I'm not sure off the top of my head, but it was on pace as of 2 weeks ago to surpass, I think it was the 2001 or 2002 season by like 400 home runs for the most home runs hit ever in a season. And just think about that era of steroids where everyone was just hitting home runs. Like this year is going to surpass that record year by 300 to 400 home runs. It's just insane to me. And obviously when you have the home run ball happening so much, that's the only play in baseball where there's immediately going to be, no matter what, a run scored or more on the board. And so when there's this many home runs, it's just the totals are going to have to fly up. And I, like I told you, I got caught a couple times just trying to pick off some unders that I thought were crazy and didn't work out. Luckily, I didn't just keep firing at them because overs just keep coming in. You have seen, I think, more so in the last, like in June, people have talked about it the last few weeks. Like Adam mentioned, he said, now you're seeing all the 10s and 10 and a halves. You'll have one game a day that's like a 7 or 7.5, and that's the Kershaw game or, you know, whatever ace versus ace might be playing or throwing that particular day. But other than that, you're really never seeing 6.5 or lower now. And the average is like 8.5 to 9, 9.5, which before it was probably, you know, especially in the National League, it felt like it was more like 7.5 to 8.5. So it's been like, you know, a run and a half, per game difference in total in the market, at least in totals. I'm not sure what the actual number is, but it's something that's kind of unprecedented to see in a sport happen so quickly and seemingly just over, you know, one turn of from one year to the next.
Let me ask you one more thing about baseball, and then I want to get on to the NBA and talk a little bit about the playoffs and how you ended up there.
Sure.
But in terms of baseball here, as far as watching the market goes, you mentioned some guys that are moving, you know, 200K a week around in baseball, sort of packing it away a little bit now, or at the very least limiting their exposure quite a bit just because of the way that things are going. So with regards to tracking line moves out there in the market, you know, a lot of people like yourself, a lot of professional bettors out there shifting focus toward college football need to be ready for that and have had their focus on it for a while now because of some of the timelines that we'll talk about a little bit later in the show. But as far as Major League Baseball line moves go, can we assume that more of them are going to be publicly driven from this point forward?
You know, I'm not, to be honest, I don't think that there's really much public action that'll ever drive a line one way or the other in a daily, you know, a baseball game, like maybe a World Series game 7 or something. But you know, the random baseball slate on a Wednesday in June isn't going to, in my opinion, no matter how public a side might be, really make a difference. There's still going to be guys betting baseball that do move the market and influence the market. And, you know, if there's a number that's off enough or far away enough, I mean, they're going to hit it. So in my opinion, I would say no. I don't think there's going to be more publicly driven stuff. My only assumption would be that there's just less line movement in general because there's less groups or people betting into the market. So there'll be less movement. But as far as assuming that the actual moves that do happen are going to be driven by public betting because it's less sharp now, potentially, I don't think that'll be the case.
All right, well, let's go over to the NBA here. Obviously, that's been wrapped up for a couple of weeks. Golden State Warriors champions over the Cleveland Cavs. Not really a big surprise given, you know, how the entire season has gone. Of course, you were all over some Golden State futures, so the NBA wrapped up pretty well for you. Give us sort of an overview on how things did go for you. How did the playoffs go for you? And then, you know, also, what is your timeline in terms of getting ready for the next NBA season?
Sure. So NBA was a really, really good regular season. And I think we've talked about before, NBA similar to me with the baseball. I usually only bet it regularly till about the All-Star break. And I've, you know, in a quick summary from people that have missed other shows, I just have found that my NBA post All-Star break is not as good. Whether it's the actual like market CLV stuff, I don't think is the case, but it's more, I think, just randomness with certain guys resting, you know, teams resting guys has become such a common thing now. Certain teams tanking or not tanking or what, you know, late in the season, it just was becoming a lot less, I guess, foreseeable as far as what you're going to expect to get motivation-wise from some teams. So I would be betting into stuff, you know, when certain teams had already given up or other teams, like, you know, now it just happened a lot more too the last few seasons. So luckily I did kind of make this rule up for myself beforehand, but this year was worse than ever as far as guys just been like, oh, Cleveland, you know, Kyrie, Kevin Love, and LeBron just didn't even travel to Indiana to play this weekend or whatever. That stuff just is crazy. So if you're betting, you know, games day before, night before, when lines are softer and you aren't required to, you know, need the 5-6-figure limits, whatever it is you're trying to get down, you know, that can backfire. So I think that was part of the reason that I decided, or a majority of the reason I decided to just bet through the All-Star break. So for me, I was planning on that until there were some good spots really late in the season in matchups where you knew what the motivation was, probably between teams that weren't even vying for playoff, or excuse me, were both vying for playoff stuff. So you wouldn't have any of that, you know, tanking possibility or you know, backups of certain teams playing all the second and fourth quarters because it doesn't matter. So I fired at like 3 or 4 or 5 of them because we just were hitting every single one. And so the regular season ended up really strong. And then playoffs was weird this year. We were positive. I think we went like 19-14 overall. So, and we won the big Warriors future was fantastic. And we had a lot of -2.5 series games. It was like +182 to +175. So I needed Warriors in 4 or 5, essentially. That was my biggest bet I've made in a long time. And so that was great. And so in actual pocket money, I made a lot more than 19-14 would say, but, I took a step out on a team that I thought was by far better than anyone else. There's even a tweet, like, I don't know, probably in February. I just watch the NBA all the time, whether I'm betting on it or not. It may have been March, but I just said, you know, the best team in the entire league right now gets to add a guy named Kevin Durant in 2 weeks. And it's just, it wasn't fair. And at the time they were playing the best basketball. And without Durant, obviously, you know, maybe the Cavs would have beaten Golden State in the finals. But my point was that they get to add, you know, a top 2 or 3 player in the whole world. And they still were already playing, like, such great basketball. So it was one of those where, yeah, I had, like, a -125 from earlier in the season. And I tell you, Adam, and you maybe had stuff like this in your past. But if I was before the playoffs, they were only -180 still, and things were just shaking out where Durant looked like he was going to be playing and be fine and be healthy. And they maybe even had played a couple games in that opener against, I think it was Portland, who they played first round. But I just was like, you know, I'm going to hate myself if I don't bet more money at -180. And then sure enough, it was like -250 before the finals. And I was just like, I'm going to hate myself if I don't put more money on this. So I kept betting it at worse prices at different times. But I had to do it. And, you know, luckily it was pretty sweat-free, which is rare when it comes to sports gambling. But it was a good finish to our season. And, you know, as far as next season goes, I know you threw that in the little notes that you wanted to talk about. The one thing I took away from this, I was going to say, was weird. I mentioned that at the beginning of my playoff talk. At one point, I don't remember what it finished at, but at one point home underdogs in the NBA playoffs were 2-14. I know for sure that they lost the next two. So it was 2-16, and then I think the Cavs – won game four, which made it 3-16 total. So yeah, home underdogs in the playoffs, 3-16 against the spread, which is just absurd. Small sample, and it's weird variance. But generally I've done well in spots like that where you get the reaction to a team going up 2-0 and you're getting such value on the team game three at home or even game four at home as a dog, where the perception and the lines move so much because of just one or two games. And sure enough, Golden State just was sweeping through the playoffs. You know, they almost went 16-0, and the Cavs only ended up losing one game themselves, and they were at home when they did. There wasn't even a road game, so the Cavs were crushing as favorites on the road throughout the entire playoffs. So I got caught in a few of those spots, but anyone that's betting that more regularly just got destroyed. It was 3-16, I think. It could be 3-17 or 4-17. It's somewhere in that range, and I've never seen anything like that. So it's nothing that, like, I would use to adjust going into next season as far as betting NBA playoffs, but it's something to take note of, just in case. You know, maybe the actual, you know, market had caught up to an extent where it wasn't enough to actually back the home team in those spots, and the real sharp bets were betting on the, you know, team in games one and games two in the short line. Like, a good example would have been, like, even just looking at the finals, I'll just give an example because I'm not sure if I'm making a lot of sense, but like Golden State was laying 7.5 in game one at home to the Cavs. And the true opener was actually 5.5, I think, or even 5. And, you know, they were laying 5 in game 3 on the road. Like, that's absurd. Like, they were laying 7.5 at home in game 1. And they crushed the Cavs. That was the short line. You had to take advantage of it. Then I don't think game 3 laying 5 on the road was necessarily very incorrect. I think that was more so of, hey, I think we missed out on betting Golden State in game 1 or game 2. You know, you saw the same thing with the totals. Game 1 and game 1 started so slow and ended up going under that the game 2 total, I believe, was like 220. And after that, every game went over the total in the finals by far. And I think game 5, the total was like 234, something like that. So when just in a couple games, the total had moved in the same matchup. And generally later in series, after you've played each other multiple times, the totals go down. Not in this case, it went up 14 points. So like the best bet, I think, of the entire playoffs, and I didn't make it. I missed it. But game 2, Warriors Cavs over 220, I think was the best bet anyone's ever made in the playoffs this year. But anyway, I bring those examples up to show you that like the perception and the moves just within one series between the same two teams can be drastic. And you know, in this case, I thought it was evident at the end of the series that the totals should have been in the 230s, so that 220 was just too low, and that it was evident that the Golden State laying 4 or 5 on the road in Cleveland probably was correct as well. And, you know, the times to bet them would have been in games 1 and games 2. So that's what I was getting at when I was saying, you know, going into next year, I don't want to just say, oh, 3-16 home teams against the spread, home dogs, because there might have been reasons for that. And in this case, Golden State was just so good. They were just covering against everyone they played. And same with Cleveland on the road through the East, when the East is just so much weaker. And, you know, in that case, I think you can throw away like maybe 12 of the games. And in that case, it's only, you know, 3-4 or something in the non-Golden State Cleveland situation. So it's good to look in just in general as a rule of thumb, like look into those trends or types of data or whatever over the course of a season or a playoff or whatever it is, more than just what it says on the front, you know, of the cover as far as those things go, because there's usually more story to it.
So I do want to ask you this. We obviously have some more off-season movement to go here. But I'm looking at 5 dimes now because I figured they would have this, and it actually turns out that they do. Plus 140 on the Warriors-Cavs being the finals matchup again next season, minus 170 for any other matchup. Is it going to be Warriors-Cavs? I mean, do you feel like that price point is kind of worth looking at, assuming, you know, obviously that you want to tie up your money for 11 months?
Yeah, you know, it probably is. I think it's with that type of thing, other than or outside of tying up the money forever, like you mentioned, it's essentially, especially in the NBA right now, just the way it's set up and, you know, the teams are have been formed, but it's essentially like an injury bet. And that's what it was when I bet the Warriors back in, was it November, at minus 125. And then Kevin Durant got injured for almost the rest of the regular season. And so sure enough, my minus 125 that had gone up into the 200s was back to being about market price. I think it was minus 125 again. And I think I even actually gave out on the show. I said, you know, that's a good bet. Assuming Kevin Durant comes back, that's going to be really short. And, you know, but if someone else gets hurt, then it's not a good bet anymore. And that's, unfortunately, that's kind of what it is that you're betting on. I think in this particular case with the NBA, the Cavs are going to have one more run with LeBron. They're still going to be the best team in the East, barring a trade from Boston, which they seem reluctant to even do. And the most recent news is a 3-way trade that sends Paul George to Cleveland and with Denver. And so Indiana is probably going to get like, I don't know, like Moutier and Barton in a pick or something, like a couple young guys in a pick. And if that happens, I think it makes Cleveland better just because they can match up much more efficiently defensively, which is, I mean, we talked about their defense all year long and people were, oh, they'll flip the switch. You know, people, I don't know if people know this or not. Did you know that the Cleveland, the Cavs, they set the record for the most efficient offense in the history of the playoffs this year? They averaged like 115 against the Warriors in the finals and lost 1-4, or they lost in 5. They're all season long, they were like the 21st, 22nd ranked defense in the entire league. It's really bad. They just weren't good. Hey, you get rid of Love and you bring a guy like Paul George who can immediately switch, you know, on to guys like Draymond and Kevin Durant and even Clay or whatever, Iguodala. That's just going to be a massive addition to their defense that will immediately pump him up. And I don't think Paul George is necessarily like a decline from Kevin Love offensively. And he doesn't seem like the type of guy like Carmelo Anthony, where if you brought him into the mix, he's a ball stopper. And just, I don't think he could really flow with Cleveland and Kyrie and LeBron as well as what Kevin Love has learned to do, or what Paul George will eventually learn how to do if he ends up there. So to go to your initial point, sorry, that was kind of long-winded in the end with this small thing, but I think it is going to be Warriors-Cavs again for sure, assuming everyone's healthy. And, you know, that's not something I'd put my bet on because injuries happen. You know, even just 2 years ago, Steph got hurt and then Draymond was suspended and Boga got hurt for three games. And, you know, the year before that, Cleveland was on their way and then, you know, Love separated his shoulder and then Kyrie hurt his knee in game one of the finals. So things like that happen more often than you probably even think about. So if you go back and look, it's not something that I'd bet, but it, you know, assuming everyone's healthy starting the playoffs, that plus 140 is going to be, you know, minus 200 or something, 240. It's definitely a good bet, you know, if you're able to run good as far as the health goes.
All right, let's get into this college football stuff here. The Golden Nugget Games of the Year came out, what, I think last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that. And I actually talked to Brad Powers about it. I shot him a text and I said, hey, you know, did you grab any of those numbers? He said that he thought they were pretty efficient numbers, and also mentioned that there were only like six or eight guys down there in line. And I mean, this used to be like, you know, the big deal. I mean, there was a long line to get these numbers have moved quickly. You know, for those that have been to the Golden Nugget, and I don't know how many of our listeners out there have, not a very big sports book. So, you know, people were pretty crammed in, very close quarters down there. Times have changed. I mean, the South Point now out there, Chris Andrews out in front of the market with basically everything that he can be at this point. Has that affected your timeline a whole lot?
Yeah, so last year, so I used to do the thing in the Nugget where I'd go in with a lot of my money and a lot of other people's money and bet into as many possible, you know, games as I could. I think the second year I did it, which is the last year before South Point came in and interrupted things, which I'll get to, but I had bet 31, I don't think it was 31 games. There were certain games where I just hit again. They let you bet 1,000 at a time. So there were certain games where I'd hit 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000. So in the end, I had 31 tickets and went like 25-6. And I was just like, this is the greatest thing in the world. Then South Point the next year, as I'm getting ready to, you know, do the Nugget stuff in June again, or I think it was even July. They used to do it beginning of July. But Chris Andrews goes to South Point and he's like, you know what, we're just going to throw up our games of the year before anyone's expecting it. We're going to just blindside everyone. I think he tweeted and he's like, games of the year for, you know, 100 and something games up Friday. And it was like 2 days before. And then I think the week after that, he had season win totals for every single team up as well. So I went from taking my time and getting my college football prep ready to like not sleeping for two nights almost. I think I slept 3 hours total trying to just get every team to a point where I could at least go and pick off the really, really bad ones. And that's what I did. And I still had a pretty profitable, you know, I guess, game of the year season, you'd call it that. And where I was able to do a lot better was I had the extra week before season win totals. And I went and hit a bunch of the season win totals that Chris opened at South Point. And those were, he does every team, which even offshore, you're not getting most of the, you know, outside of the main conferences, the ACC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac 12, and SEC, you're not going to get a team. Maybe Five Dimes puts it up eventually. He has them all up, but in May. You know, so if you want to bet South Alabama, you can in May, or Ball State, like you can. It's so there is a lot of edges there. So I've enjoyed it now that I wasn't blindsided figuring out what happened this season. I was actually out of town, so I missed, like when Brad went in to South Point, I know he got some stuff that I missed out on, but I bet the same ones he did. In a few spots, I think one, I'm looking at my list. I think he bet Oregon minus one at Wyoming. I bet minus three once I got back in town. So there was about a week before I could make it back here and go through everything. But in the end, some of these are, you know, 10 points off. So I'm not, if he has minus one and I have minus three is still 7.5 points short. I'm going to bet it. So I went through, and I don't know if you want to talk about some of them that I bet, because the Nugget was just this last week. I think it was Thursday. So just 4 days ago. I didn't bet any of them just because I thought that outside of, I think there was one team that they rated in general at the Nugget different than where I had them or some other people had them, or then even Phil Steele once his magazine came out a couple weeks back. And that was Notre Dame. So outside of those Notre Dame games, I wasn't even really looking at, like Brad said, they were pretty efficient. And that helps once you, I mean, no offense to the Nugget, but when you have a month plus of seeing the market move, you know, because someone else opened first at way softer numbers, that's a big advantage to where you're going to open up all of your lines. So, and not only that, you can use season win total moves to your advantage. Like maybe you wanted to put up a few games of the year that South Point didn't have or didn't list, but you saw the South Point games of the, season win totals. And you saw that say you wanted to do like, I don't know, BYU, Utah, I don't even know if they're playing this year off the top of my head, to be honest. So that's just one that came to my head where you maybe wouldn't have that be a normal game of the year. And say the Nugget did, and they saw that BYU season win total, you know, went down a game. Well, then maybe they can use that to say like, hey, the sharp guys betting into these are not as high on BYU as, you know, maybe we would have been, or at least Chris Andrews was at South Point, and you can make some adjustments before you ever release your games of the year. So it's definitely, I'm not surprised they were efficient and that there were only six or seven people there betting at them, just because it's kind of what you would hope or expect from a book that had, you know, over a month of market vision, so to speak, to make those lines.
So now I want to ask you about this. I want to ask you about your starting point for putting together your college football preparations. And I imagine that, you know, obviously the number one starting point is going off of what you had last year, seeing where you had teams rated and then adjusting from there. But you do your own magazine. They've got Steel. I'm sure there are plenty of other ones out there that are, you know, in the college football landscape. And of course, Bill Connolly does some great work over there at SB Nation as well that a lot of people talk very highly of. So what do you do? Are you just in like, you know, are you just absorbing all the information that you can? Are you doing stuff on your own? You know, how do you get your foundation that you're comfortable with before you put out your own magazine?
So I do a lot of work, which maybe surprises people, with just like local blogs or podcasts, or like sometimes they're even like student driven ones, but they're just, and that's like throughout the season. I like to just listen to a perspective. You know, sometimes you can tell right away if it's just a homer perspective or not, but there are some good podcasts for every team out there that aren't like the famous ones that are attached to, you know, SB Nation or some other higher, you know, network or whatever, or website. So I think a lot of those can be really valuable. And, you know, a lot of those guys are talking about early spring practices, or they're talking about all the recruits, because that's all they look at is just those recruits that they got. And so they do the research for you almost, to an extent. So you have to go through and obviously figure out, you know, I just feel like they're sometimes more, and some of them, those guys go to like the practices still and stuff and see the athletes. And I just feel like they know their 10 freshmen that are probably going to play this year better than, you know, even someone like Steele or just whoever it is trying to rate, you know, however many 10 freshmen times, however many teams. Like, it's just, there's only so much work a company or one person can do. And so I put a lot of the early work is just researching the recruiting and the freshmen and how they're going to impact versus the seniors and juniors, you know, that left maybe early or whatever the program. And so, you know, I'll start with a power rating that ended the year prior that I thought was about as, you know, efficient of a power rating as you could have come bowl games in, you know, early January. So I go from there, you know, certain quarterback that was really, you know, say Deshaun Watson's gone, went to the NFL, like that's a big drop for Clemson. Now they're still Clemson, but, you know, he's going to be just himself, you know, like a 6-point loss or something. And so you bring him down. But they had some other guys that were coming back that were going to be beneficial, I think, defensively. And so you just kind of have to go from there. So what I actually do for a power rating for every team is I go through, essentially rate every unit on a scale, and the scale is dependent on how valuable that unit is, I think, to the outcome of a football game. So like a quarterback is going to be more valuable than the linebacker unit. I think the offensive line's one that's very underrated in general. And so I rate that one pretty high. Same with the defensive line. Nowadays, with the way passing's going, I think secondaries are underutilized or at least underappreciated. So a really, really good secondary. An example last year comes to my mind, like Colorado and Washington out of the Pac-12, where they see deep, you know, passing offenses all the time, but both had, you know, remarkable defenses, and, you know, a lot of that was having NFL talent at cornerback. So in today's NFL, or excuse me, football, and with guys that are going NFL or they're passing still, at a high rate now. I think those are something that are, or that's something worth considering, are those cornerbacks and safeties. So anyway, I rate them all depending on the unit and then the coaches and coordinators and, just essentially get an aggregate power rating for every team and then make adjustments as I talk to other people here in town, which I've done. And then when Steele comes out, he's generally, done the most work out of anyone because what he does all year. And if there's a few teams where I'm significantly higher or lower than him on a certain team, then I'll adjust, kind of meet in the middle and trust his opinion. If for people that have looked at Steele already, I can give a few examples. It'll be fun for people to recognize or see what I'm talking about. But his number one surprise team this year is Florida. I've been on the Florida train for a few years. We had them to win the SEC East that first year under McElwain 2 years ago, and I think at like 13-1. It was just a crazy price, and Tennessee's been the favorite because they're Tennessee and they were supposed to just be good, but I've always thought Florida, and their offense has been non-existent. They're still winning the SEC East, so now they got Zaire coming from Notre Dame transfer, probably going to be their quarterback, going to be better than anything they've had. And so now, Steele's going out on a limb saying they're a number one surprise team. I don't think they're that surprising. For a lot of people, I think they upped Florida in their power ratings. For me, I did, and I left them where they were at. But another example, his number two surprise team was Miami. And they just lost Brad Kaya to the NFL. He left early. But I think they bring back their whole front seven on defense, and he's Steele's all over their defense this year and thinks that, Kaya probably is someone that's actually replaceable the way in scheme that Miami, runs their offense. So I bumped Miami up, I think, from like my power rating was like 83.5. I think I bumped them to 85.5, something like that. So I gave them 2 points just because I was trusting Steele, and maybe I am down in Miami. Now, when I'm actually betting a Miami game in week one or two or three, I'm not going to forget that. If I'm like, man, all these Miami lines 3 weeks in, I have way higher than the market, then I'll know that maybe Steele wasn't right and I can adjust back. Or maybe they're going to be short Steele and I got to adjust more the other way. This time will tell. So you can't be 100% certain with everything. But you have to go through and make those adjustments. And so when you do that with every single team, there's always going to be some that are quite a bit off. Two that he was down on in the Mountain West that I was higher on to a degree that I had to downgrade them were UNLV and Wyoming. For some reason, he doesn't like Wyoming coming back with an NFL quarterback with their coach, I think it's Craig Bohl, who came over from FCS North Dakota State, won a bunch of championships there. I thought what they did last year was going to be very telling about where the direction of their program, especially with Josh Allen, a quarterback. But Steele doesn't like him. I think he had him ranked like 93 out of all the teams. And I was like, I had him in like my 70s. So we were like 18 teams apart. So I downgraded Wyoming a little bit, and I downgraded UNLV similarly. But you just have to do that with every team and just, know that you're going into it without 100% certainty of anything ever. And, you just have to be quick to make adjustments early in the season. I will say the point of doing all that outside of betting games of the year is the season wins. And in order to make a projection as far as how many wins you expect the team to actually get, you need to have their power rating, you need to have their opponent's power ratings, you need to have projected spreads for every game and a projected outcome win percentage of every game. And, convert that into a projected season win total. And whether or not Miami's 83.5 or 85.5 isn't going to swing me on a win total. Like that 2 points over the course of 12 games is maybe like, 3/10 of a win or something, depending on which key numbers they maybe fall on or don't fall on. But it's nothing significant enough where, I'm going to be like, oh, well, now I'm, my numbers say to bet the Miami season wins over. It doesn't change that much. So a 2-point adjustment isn't like so significant that it's going to do damage to my work I've already done and make me make plays that I wouldn't have otherwise. So I just wanted to get that in there at the end because it's important to when you're projecting now for every single team, recognize that a couple points here or there, as far as the power rating goes, doesn't change the actual season win total projection as much as maybe people would think. So for me, it didn't end up making me like take back a bet that I'd already made or make one otherwise, but it probably just sharpened up, a point or two here or there come week one, what I'm projecting, from the game to game perspective.
So we talked a little bit about timelines and the lines at the South Point, and then of course the Golden Nugget. How about the timeline for you? When are you hoping to have that college football magazine out? And when do you feel like, you're ready to go into week one with your numbers?
So this week, actually, so I for people that have followed me before, I every year I've done like a comprehensive cheetah guide or NCAA football guide, every major team. Plus, I do the AAC and Mountain West Conference and the Independents, and then I have like another side page of all the smaller schools as well. But I would do a chart that showed, who they were playing, the projected spread of that game, projected win percentage, their total, season win total I projected. Percentage of like offensive defensive returners, their power rating, and then I did like an actual write-up or breakdown, excuse me. And if I had a play as far as the season win total went, division, conference, future, any of those, I would write about it and I would give away the play and the guide. Now the guide was like last year was actually free, but in past years it was like $25. It was really cheap. It was more just trying to get a lot of people's eyes on it and get down on features that they were able to get down on. Well, this year I'm doing it a little bit differently. So there's still going to be a PDF file that's the charts and the numbers, but I think it'll be a lot more efficient for me and a lot less time instead of writing out, typing out every single team's like breakdown. I mean, it was taking me like 2 to 3 months just every year, and probably done it 4 years, so this will be my fifth. But instead of doing that, I'm going to do like a 3-minute audio clip for every single team and posted on this new site that I'm launching this week called Podcast U. And essentially the idea is that people can, they can get the PDF still and refer to the charts and the numbers and this and that, but then they listen to the audio clip for whatever teams they're interested in, and they can choose. If you want to listen to every single team, great. If I have a bet on the season win total or a future I've made, it'll be in the audio clip. If I didn't make a bet or a future, I'll still talk about the team and break it down and talk over the schedule some. But I'm going to have that kind of up on a site where people can just go through on their own and listen to them that way. So it only takes me, 3 minutes times 100 and something teams rather than an hour times 100 and something teams to do the write-up stuff, probably more than an hour on each team. So anyway, that's the new kind of venture there, which I think people actually like the sites. It's going to be a lot nicer down the road. And as far as the design goes, it's right now it's just on a WordPress backing site that I did really cheap, but down the road, it's going to be, I think, something that's going to look sharp and eventually be something where people can go every single week for free content and paid content as far as podcasts go. And people that have followed me last year know that I did for the first 5 or 6 weeks a video on YouTube breaking down every single game per week. I'm going to do that again, but it'll be through the website. So if you wanted to know if I, what I thought, what my numbers were, projections, what I thought about the X's and O's and scheming of, anyone from UCLA, USC to, a Ball State, Ohio game, that's fine. I'm going to have every single game up there every week, and people can subscribe and get that. It'll be really cheap, and it's just a, I guess a vehicle to just get more information from someone in Vegas that even on games I'm not betting on top of the ones that maybe I am. So it's going to be, I think, valuable, and there's going to be other people that are contributing as well with their content down the road. So it won't just be me. It's kind of the idea of the podcast university is, it'll be eventually, a site where people can post all any content they want themselves, assuming I think it's good enough. And we go from there, and it's a way to just help everyone get eyes on everyone else's stuff as well, which will be helpful for everyone in the industry and just in sports media in general, just trying to get better at what they do.
One final thing I want to ask you about here with regards to college football, and I know that we've run a little bit long here today, and I apologize for that, and I appreciate you hanging in here with me.
No problem.
We've talked about this in the past where, from a bankroll management standpoint, you have your in-season bankroll and you have your off-season bankroll. So as far as this year goes, does it look like you're going to have an even split between, win totals and futures and all that, and also the week-to-week stuff? Or do you feel like, as we're getting into the college football season, we mentioned it with baseball already, the lines seem to be a little bit more efficient. I would presume college football should be a little bit more efficient than it has in years past as well. Do you feel like your greater edges now come before the season? Do you feel like you're still going to, do a lot of stuff week to week?
Yeah, so the hard part with futures is getting down enough to once you get to that point. Like Adam just said, I definitely think there's more value in betting. Just in general, there's more value in betting a season win total because there's so much less variance over 12 games than there is one 60-minute game that could happen on, you know, on a Saturday. Like, anything could happen on one Saturday. If you're really strongly opinionated about a team, over the course of 12 games, you're probably either just going to be right or wrong. And if you think you're right more often than not, then you're going to be right more often than not, I guess is the way to put it. And it comes down to the same thing as far as betting week to week goes. But, you know, the example I like to throw at people who have asked me questions about that is like if you could bet the Warriors against the Sixers for a full 48-minute game or a 1-minute game, which would you prefer? You know, and the answer is the 48-minute game, because in 1 minute of basketball, I mean, the Sixers hit a three, the Warriors missed one, and then the Sixers are dribbling it out, and, you know, the Warriors are fouling. Like, the game's over. It's like anything can happen. Is the time of the actual bet decreases, and the variance shoots way up. So over the season, it's like the next level where, you know, if you think you have a 1.5 or 2-game edge on a season win total, like, you should be throwing as much as you can conceivably afford on that bet, rather than even just, you know, one game on a Saturday where you maybe have a 4 or 5 point edge. So for me, I'm trying to bet as much as I can before the season, whether it's the games of the year and season win totals or divisions, conference futures. It's tough. There's only so many that are available offshore. Credits, they're nice because you can, you know, you don't have to front all the money, but they generally only copy stuff once they've moved some. And so, yeah, it's kind of a system and organizing it to a way where you can get down your money. But I definitely will put more into per bet, you know, about 3 times as much as I probably do per bet during the season. So that gives people, I guess, an idea. It's like, yeah, maybe a little more than 3 times actually. So I think that's something that people just kind of have to decide on their own. But I think mathematically it makes more sense if you perceive an edge X big over the course of an entire season. I think that's going to be paying off more often than just any one game would. So split the bankrolls up, put an allotted amount into the futures or season win totals, and then go from there. And I think that's something that's not only just conservative and healthy for your bankroll anyways, but you'll notice and you'll be able to see right from the get-go, like, the return on investment on those bets versus the season bets, you know, the week-to-week bets. And that's why I was able to recognize after a couple of years, like, I should be taking $30,000 to Golden Nugget, you know, a few years ago, and betting as much as I can into these games of the year or season wins, just because there was such a big edge there, and rather than holding it off so that I could bet more games on, you know, during the week. So I think that was a good question to end this on. And if people have questions about it, they can shoot me a message on Twitter and I'll talk to them. But definitely split up and allocate some of your money for college football into futures. And I do it for every league, to be honest. So it's not just football, but I think that's a positive way to approach it.
A lot of good thoughts today from @SportsCheat on Twitter. You can find his work over at WagerTalk.com and then also this new podcast venture. But Cheetah, really great to talk to you again, man. I can talk sports betting with you all day. So thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll get a chance to talk to you again real soon.
Absolutely. Sounds good. You take it easy.
Oh, great stuff there today from Sports Cheetah of WagerTalk.com. Coming up on Thursday's show, we'll have another edition of the Bettors Box. That's my MLB betting podcast. Then we'll turn things over to next week with a similar format. But that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. And I will talk to you again on Thursday.